done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Hall, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, everyone. This is NFL linebacker Avery Williamson, and you're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey, guys. Welcome to episode 386 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country they represent. Thanks to all you men, women, and service animals for everything you do for us on a daily basis.
You guys are the best. We pray for you guys every single day. And thank you for making it easier for us to sleep at night.
Amen.
God bless you.
I did want to say special shout out to the Coast Guard who lost their lives over in Japan when the plane crashed into the runway, into the Coast Guard plane. Mm. It was a horrible incident. And obviously, this week we had another school shooting in Perry, Iowa, to where, those things just shouldn't happen. Unfortunately, they do. And first responders, my understanding is, did a heck of a job out there. So just big shout outs to those people this week.
Yes, guys, we're praying for you all. And, I guess you just never know what's going to happen on a daily basis. So,
yep, that's why we hold you guys in such regard, because you go to work every day not having a clue if you're going to have to put your life on the line for somebody else.
Yep, that's absolutely true.
All right, Tracy, also, I want to do this in the beginning of the show. We lost a member of our beloved Hillbilly audience this week.
We did.
So a few weeks ago on my Facebook page, I had responded about somebody who had left a nasty review. And in the comment section, Kevin Holmes had took up for us, obviously, and said some very nice things about Tracy and I in the show. And he had mentioned in that comment that his wife had terminal cancer and he has cancer that's just been diagnosed as terminal as well. That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Mary, a couple of days ago, took a turn for the worse, went into the hospital. We had been in contact with Kevin during that process. And a few nights ago, unfortunately, she lost her battle.
She did. We were very sad to hear that.
And we actually, on our way back from Florida yesterday, had a video call with Kevin to express our condolences and then talk to him for a little bit. And we got his okay to at least mention him and Mary on the show tonight, because this was something, the show was something that they united over. Kevin said that they listened to the show almost every night together. And we tried to do a video call with Mary, but it's just time got too short to where she just didn't feel like it and couldn't do it. And we regret that we wasn't able to jump on that a little bit sooner. But as we just said a while ago, you never know what the day holds when you start off. And I know when Kevin wrote us a couple of weeks ago, they didn't have any thoughts that this was going to happen so quick.
No. It's very sad. And, you know, I got to see Kevin and talk to him yesterday, and what a sweetheart he is. So we just wanted to thank him for his continued support. And, you know, we love you. And if you ever need anything, we're here if you need to talk.
Amen. With that being said, if you're struggling with something right now and you're going through some things, no matter what it is, could be bills from the holidays, could be just income situations. I know we spoke to someone also yesterday that's just struggling with finding a job, and they've got a job but it just doesn't pay enough, and it's you know, wreaking havoc on their lives, obviously. And sometimes it just helps to talk to somebody. And that person, obviously, we won't name them, but, you know, their exact comments were, my job situation makes me feel like a loser. And, you know, you can't feel that way. We live in an economy where people are right now sometimes making more money than they've ever made in their life and still struggling because everything else has went up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's harder to find jobs that will make ends meet. Some people have to have two and three jobs just to make ends meet, and it's a sucky situation. But that's the world we live in right now, and you're not the only one in that situation. So don't by any means feel like that you're a loser if you're one of those people out there that feel that way. Because I'm sure this person isn't the only one.
No, I'm sure.
Feels that way. It's just you know, but we can get through it all together.
Absolutely. Keep your head up. Just push forward, and it'll all work out in the end.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Just, you know, if you need to reach out to the group. I know this particular person didn't necessarily want to reach out to the group because I think they felt like that, you know, they didn't want to look bad in front of the group. But keep in mind, that's what the group's there for. This is a judgment-free zone. We're like Planet Fitness, but... with this, don't ever feel like that you can't post because somebody's going to judge you, because I promise you, if somebody's going to judge you, they are no longer going to be in that group.
Oh, absolutely not.
And I think we've weeded most. I don't think I've seen a negative comment towards something somebody's posted in 2 years.
Yeah. Because you guys are the best and we love y'all.
Who else can they contact if they need to, Tracy?
You can call the crisis hotline at 988. Or you can text at 741-741. You can also call my number or Jerry's number if you need it. Just, you know, shoot us a message on Facebook or something, and we'll get that to you.
All right. Let's jump into this story this week. This is one I'm excited about.
All right. I guess I'll be excited too.
Tracy, we've done more than a few haunted lighthouses on this show. And you know I love haunted lighthouses. Point Lookout Lighthouse in Scotland, Maryland, may be one of the bloodiest histories, as far as at least the land that the lighthouse sits on, out of any that we've ever covered.
Oh, all right. That says a lot.
We also, before we get too far into this, we do not have a special guest again tonight. And we won't next week. And maybe not the week after.
Oh.
So we're just tearing down the studio and all this stuff. That just, the time to be able to do the interviews and stuff just aren't there. So.
Well, that's very true. I wasn't even thinking about that. That's dumb.
So we're working on the bare minimums here.
But we'll get y'all back up and running and get those interviews going once we get settled.
Yeah. All right. So, amongst all of Maryland's haunted locations, none had the fright capacity of Point Lookout Lighthouse. So for over 350 years, humans have massacred and been massacred. There have been torture, people imprisoned, all on this location in one way, shape, or form.
That does not sound like a fun place.
There have also been shipwrecks, famine, disease, and war.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is a classic recipe for some paranormal activity. So let's get into some history of Point Lookout Lighthouse. We're going to do some of the history now and some of the history later, and I've timed it that way for a reason.
All right. Sounds great.
The lighthouse is located in St. Mary's County, Maryland. Like we said, the city is Scotland, Maryland.
Those two don't sound like they should go together.
Scotland, Maryland?
Uh-huh.
Well, they do.
Well, I know. That's kind of cool, though.
Maybe over in Scotland, there's a town Maryland, called Maryland. Scotland. The original structure is actually the one that is still there, believe it or not. It was built in 1830. So back in 1825, the federal government decided that a lighthouse was needed at Point Lookout to, I guess, obviously warn ships of the shoals that are right there, and to also mark an entrance to the Potomac River. Guess how much was proposed for this project to build a lighthouse?
I wouldn't even venture to guess.
$1,800.
$1,800?
This was back in 1825.
$1,800. Wow.
But the landowner, Jennifer Taylor, didn't want to sell, at least not for the price that they were wanting to give for the land. He eventually settled for $1,150 just for the land. Remember, they had $1,800 for the entire lighthouse land and all. He wanted $1,150 for the land. So, and this is not like a special piece of land. It was just a small, barren piece of land. Mm-hmm. So they thought they could get it for next to nothing, but I guess he showed that you could bargain and hold out if you knew somebody definitely wanted that spot for something. So now they're behind budget. And in 1928, Congress appropriated $4,500 on July 22nd, 1830. They paid John Donahue $3,350 to build it, because Donahue actually had built several lighthouses, including the Blackstone Island Lighthouse that burned down in the 1950s.
Oh.
And this one was the same design, basically, as that one.
Well, maybe you don't want a design like that since the first one burnt down.
Well, but this time he didn't know, because this was in the 1830s when he built it. So.
Oh.
It didn't build down to 1950, so that's 120 mm-hmm. years. I think that's pretty good. Here's a little kicker for you. Jennifer Taylor, the one who owned the land,
mm-hmm.
that's actually a male.
Well, you know, I thought you maybe misspoke a while ago when you said Jennifer and then you said he.
No. But he was offering to sell the land for a little bit less
mm-hmm.
if they would make him the first lightkeeper.
Oh, okay.
But they decided they might want somebody with some experience to do that job.
Oh, well, that's true. That's very true.
But they opted to go with someone else, like we said, because, you know, for that reason. It is interesting to note, though, that Jennifer and his wife, Elizabeth, are buried in what is now the picnic area of the park there.
So he stayed close, huh?
He did stay close. The lighthouse began operating on September 30th, 1830, our anniversary. Not the 1830 part. Mm-hmm. We haven't been married that long.
It seems like it.
James Davis was named the first lighthouse keeper. Wasn't that the same? Isn't that the guy who does Garfield?
What's his name?
James Davis.
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's the guy's name that did Garfield. Probably not the same one.
Garfield and his lasagna.
But get this. He was the first lighthouse keeper, September 30th, 1830. He died shortly after on December 3rd.
What the heck
like
happened?
Like a month later. I don't know. His daughter, Ann Davis, took over the responsibilities of the lighthouse. Because of this, she was the lighthouse's first female keeper.
Very cool.
This is kind of funny, Tracy, and I don't know the backstory. But in Anne's contract, she was prohibited from selling alcohol on the lighthouse property.
Well, because they...
I don't know. I don't know why it would have came up. I don't know what she was doing before, where they felt like they needed to put that into contract.
Right.
But...
Well, maybe they didn't want her to be inebriated and fall out of the lighthouse.
I don't know.
Fall down the steps.
Guess what her salary was?
I would say $1 an hour.
I don't think they paid a lot of people by the hour back then.
Oh. $5.
$3.50 a year.
$3?
$350 a year. She died in 1847. That was also her dad's salary.
Okay.
So she didn't get any kind of a difference in pay. Mm-hmm. She basically took over. William Wood took over for Anne, and he had a reputation for being clumsy. He had his pay withheld for an entire year because he broke most of the mirrors inside the lighthouse. And he also allowed a cat to fall into the lantern oil. It was in the, you know, the big lantern oil barrel.
Oh, yeah.
He allowed a cat to fall in there, and that contaminated the oil, and it had to all be replaced. His salary was also $3.50 a year. Can you imagine working for a whole year and not getting paid, because you broke so many mirrors.
He must not have much of a fun life outside of that lighthouse. I mean, he was broke. Like, he couldn't even go out and party and buy a beer. Oh, no, that's right.
But he certainly couldn't buy it from Anne. Well, she was dead anyway, so it didn't matter.
Oh, that's very true.
Since he took over for her.
Well, this sounds like this lighthouse is not meant for anybody to be in there.
From 1853 to 1869, the keeper situation was sort of a family affair. He had Richard Edwards. He was the lighthouse keeper from April, or at least he was appointed in April of 1853, but he died a few months later in July.
Oh, come on.
So 3 months later, he died. Guess who took over for him? His daughter, Martha. So Martha got married, though, and she turned it over to her sister, Pamela. Now, some places list her name as Pamelia, P-A-M-E-L-I-A, and then some places list it as Pamela. So depending on which story I was looking at, it was different, so I don't know which is which.
I don't think if I was any kind of relative, I would want to work in that lighthouse because it seems like they were all doomed.
Well, there were rumors that Pamela kept prisoners there during the Civil War. There were actually some psychics that we'll talk about a little later that claimed that people were held there against their will. So
I wonder what all these people died from is what I want to know.
Well, we're going to get into some of that.
Oh, okay.
The lighthouse's last keeper was Raymond Hartzell. He operated the lighthouse until the light was permanently extinguished January 11th, 1966.
Well, he lasted longer than everybody.
Well, I don't think he was the last one. He wasn't there that whole time. He wasn't there from like the 1860s on, 100
hell no.
years.
Oh, no. Oh, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
The Navy eventually took over the lighthouse. Now, George Gatton was the last civilian lighthouse keeper, and he had over 40 years of lighthouse experience. Not all there, just in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Once the Navy and the state of Maryland took over, that's when the stories of paranormal activity started to surface. In the late 1970s, Gerald Sword moved into the north side of the lighthouse, and Anna Carpenter moved into the south side of the lighthouse. So I guess it's divided into two parts, a north side and a south side.
It just don't seem like that is big enough on top for rooms like that. I guess it is big.
It wouldn't be on top. They would be on the bottom level.
Well,
lighthouses are bigger on the bottom than
No. I know. That's true. But I wonder how, I mean, if there's just room enough for two rooms and...
There's more than two rooms, babe. There's two sides to the lighthouse and there are several rooms on each side. There's more than one room.
Okay.
Now, some lighthouses were designed so the bottom floor was like one big living area. But then you would have bunks and stuff in the upper level.
Oh.
But it's round, but it's still more than one room.
So that lighthouse we went in St. Augustine, was it the same in there?
Or? Well, yes, but also keep in mind some lighthouses have keepers lodging off-site. Like, they had different keepers' houses that were separate from the actual lighthouse.
So there wasn't any rooms in that lighthouse?
I can't remember, to be honest with
you.
It was a big open area, but I don't think it was set up like... I think there might have been a couch or something in there.
Oh, that's why I was confused, because I'm like, I didn't realize there was rooms like that in the lighthouses.
No, but some of them, the lighthouse and the keepers... Because some of them, you'd have to see... If you look at this one, it looks like a house on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the lighthouse. So... it's not on, don't think about it being on the round part. That's a separate part.
Mm.
Think about it being a house with like that light part built into it.
Okay.
So it's just, there's a house, regular house area. But in some of these lighthouses, they're not built on to the lighthouse. They're separate. This one's actually kind of built on.
Okay. Well, that's what I thought they all were. So
no.
That's why I was confused.
No, each one's a little bit different. So anyways, they move in. There's this the big house part that they're living in. It's a north side and a south side, and they basically split into two apartments.
Okay.
And Gerald moved into one. Anna moved into the other. They experienced some unexplainable events. So Gerald lived there for a few years, but he moved out after he got promoted to park superintendent. a young lady named Laura would move in after Gerald left. Now, Gerald told her that he had become very interested in the rich history of the Point Lookout area, some of which we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
He also told her that the unexpected bonuses of living at the lighthouse were the ghostly visitors.
Well, I'm sure it gets lonely, so hey, why not?
He said they frequently made their presence known to him, and he hoped they would make themselves known to her as well. He even wrote to Hans Hoser, which while he was living in the lighthouse. And of course, Hans Hoser was, you know, one of the premier paranormal investigators / book writers. I've got, I think, 4 or 5 Hans Hoser books over here.
Oh, okay,
Hans Hoser.
Cool.
Of course, people are familiar with the Hoser Files.
Yeah, yeah.
With Dave Schrader and his daughter and all that. So they would go around and investigate some of the stories and stuff that he had talked about. But he was quintessentially the man back then. As far as writing all these books and stuff. And then, of course, you had the Warrens, but,
right.
You know.
Interesting.
So he writes to Hans Hoser. He invites him to come and visit. Well, Anna Carpenter, of course, we said she lived next door. She only lived there a short time, and then she moved out because of some other commitments. But in her short time there, she reported hearing someone walking in the attic. And then she would hear furniture being moved over on Gerald's side. But it would be at times when Gerald wasn't home. Tracy, here's some of the things that Gerald told Laura happened while he was living there. He said one night the kitchen wall started to glow for about 10 minutes.
Well, that's pretty interesting, seeing there's like no fireplace there or no, nothing.
It just glowed. Every night for 2 weeks, he heard someone snoring in the kitchen.
That's unfortunate.
During storms, he often heard voices outside and inside the lighthouse. He frequently heard someone walking up and down the hallway and up the stairs. He heard loud noises and loud voices outside. He would search, and he could never find anyone there. His dog was locked one time in the screen porch. That's what. So he had the screen porch. He had locked the dog in there. In the evenings. One night he heard the dog barking. He goes outside and he finds the dog is outside the porch.
Outside the lanai?
But the door was still locked from the inside.
Oh! How in the world?
I don't know. So you only got 2 ways.
I mean, he surely couldn't have dug himself out.
No, not on a porch.
No, That's so weird.
He said he would smell strange odors in the living room.
Like what?
I don't know. He just said strange odors. Lights would turn off and on.
Ghostly
and
B.O.?
Obviously, doors would bang.
And doors was what?
Doors would bang.
Oh, doors would bang.
And create little doors.
That's cute.
Doors sporting some wood. All right. Sorry. Hans Hoser actually came, and he did the very first paranormal investigation of the lighthouse on January 14th, 1980. Laura, the one that we said had moved in, he told her about all this stuff, she actually was there, and she took notes. These are some of the things that she wrote down. The north side kitchen, dining room, apparently nothing happened there, but the living room area, the medium felt extremely sick, and she got a really bad headache. She said she could hear voices in the living room when they all went upstairs. So I guess she stayed downstairs. Everybody else went upstairs. Mm-hmm. She could hear voices in the living room. In the guest middle room upstairs, again, the medium felt sick. She said she got really chilly and she felt cold and weak. She felt that someone had experienced extreme agony in that particular room and had been held against their will. Remember, we had mentioned earlier about the possibility of Civil War soldiers being held there, that some mediums said that, and that was the case. When a later discussion suggested that some Civil War soldiers may have actually been held there. And this was something the medium was unaware of. Now, at the top of the stairs, the medium felt that there was a woman's presence and felt that the woman had contemplated throwing herself down the stairs on many occasions. Now, whether she did or not, don't know, but that was just the feeling that the medium had.
So I wonder then if she like, she goes, okay, I'm going to throw myself down the stairs. And then she gets to a landing and she's still there. And she goes, okay, so I got to throw myself down the other stairs.
Now you got to throw yourself up the stairs.
I mean, that's not funny, but.
No, it's not funny at all. But thank you for thinking it was.
No, it's not. It wouldn't be funny. I just would think maybe they would do something different, not to go to
right
the lengths of trying to fall down a bunch of stairs.
On the steps leading up to the cupola, is it
cupola? What is a cupola?
You know, it's like a little dome, like on the building. But on the steps leading up to there, the medium felt that there was a young blonde man with blue eyes. He had been murdered sometime in the last 50 years.
Aww.
Don't know any other details other than that's what she felt.
Sad.
Then with the south side living room, the medium felt unusually weird. That was the way that she had put it. She said there wasn't really any more than she could say, just a weird feeling.
Mm.
Now, they had a second investigation on February 16th, 1980. So what are we looking at a month or so what later? This is with a completely different group. This one used the Maryland Committee for Psychical Research. The medium here went by Nancy. She said in the north side hallway, she felt a presence. She also caught a woman's voice on recording singing Living in the Lighthouse. I don't know that song. In the basement, several of the people there saw a figure in the farthest back room.
All of them seen it at once?
Yes. They also recorded a voice saying, either get out or let me out. It wasn't clear enough to be able to figure it out. They held a seance in a dining room where they saw several different orbs of light floating around the room. So not just in pictures where it's dust.
Right, right.
On June 28th, 1980, there was a third investigation. And on August 22nd, 1980, there was the fourth and final investigation. The third one was pretty much uneventful. Gerald actually had invited some people to come over and do the investigation. It was during the daytime. They had people visiting the lighthouse. All those people around with it being daylight and stuff, they just didn't experience anything except they did see the figure in the basement.
Huh.
On the last investigation, there was a seance held in the front bedroom of the south part. They had captured a picture of someone in that room earlier, so they thought this would be a good place to maybe have a seance. There were many whispers picked up on recordings. And again, a figure was seen in the basement. That's three straight investigations on three different months.
They couldn't make out any of the whispering, I guess?
No. Laura said that they all heard breathing and they felt cold spots throughout the lighthouse. Now, in the mid-1990s, there were several investigations to try to determine just who was haunting the lighthouse, but nothing really came out of those and nothing was determined.
I mean, I would think that would be kind of hard, especially if there were people being held captive in there.
Yeah, but you might get somebody to tell you a name or something or tell you who they were.
Still seems like that would be hard.
In 2001, a medium named Carol was pushed by an unknown entity. She said she felt unwelcomed. You think?
Oh, that's a good sign.
She said, she did feel like there was one woman still there who was quite angry and a female family member who was also there with her. So we have some more paranormal to discuss, but we haven't discussed all the history of the area yet. Remember, I told you there would be more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Lily's excited about it.
I know it.
Now, this part is important. I touched on this briefly, but here are the details. The area that the lighthouse sits on seemed beautiful and pristine to the Maryland's first colonists when they showed up. They came up on their ocean-battered ships, the Ark and the Dove, approximately 390 years ago. A turbulent history on that beautiful peninsula, though, would ensue over the years. That would include Native American massacres, tragic fires, and deadly shipwrecks. Let's go back to the beginning. Lord Baltimore's brother, the owner and the governor of the colony, died tragically in his mid-30s. His son drowned near Calvert Bay. Virginia Native Americans raided Point Lookout in 1648, and they massacred many settlers.
Oh, gosh.
Shipwrecks have obviously been an issue since, you know, thus the lighthouse. Many sailors have drowned in that area. Several are buried on the sandy beach right there. But not even the lighthouse could have prevented all of the disasters. On November 11th, 1862, this was after the lighthouse was working, a Union gunboat, the USS Tulip, en route from there to Washington, D.C., exploded, killing all 57 on board. 8 mutilated, unidentifiable bodies washed ashore.
Man, what a horrible thing to happen.
Horror only mounted during the Civil War. Point Lookout became the site of Camp Hoffman, the Union's largest prison camp. Tracy, guess how many prisoners were held there at this prison camp?
Man, 500?
Keep going.
1,000.
Keep going.
5,000.
Keep going.
Oh, stop. 20,000.
52,264 Confederate prisoners. All there were beat-up canvas tents to house them in. This provided very little shelter.
Aww.
Starvation and disease ran rampant. These prisoners literally prayed for death to get out of the torment. But when they did die, even their bodies couldn't rest in peace. Their remains were moved as many as 3 times before ending up at a Confederate cemetery.
Their bodies were moved 3 different times?
Yep. Most of the time, they weren't buried. They were just moved from one lake location to another, and then eventually they got buried.
That's annoying.
Even in peacetime, there were disasters, because Point Lookout eventually became a very popular vacation spot. There were 100 cottages and the beautiful beaches there. And in the early 19th century, the Fenwick Inn was the hotel to stay at in the area. It was the 19th century resort fashion. This is where the elite spent their time in the summers. But in 1878, a tragic fire burned the hotel completely to the ground. Now, I don't believe there were any deaths associated with that burning down. I found that story in 4 or 5 different publications, mm-hmm. and none of them mention anything about a death toll. But that same year, the steamer, the big ship called the Express, broke up off the coast during a hurricane, and 22 lives were lost on that particular ship.
Oh my goodness, goodness, goodness. That place is just terrible.
Many of those killed over the years kind of keep, I guess we'll say, a restless vigil until this very day. Every June, this is interesting, descendants of the Civil War dead gather to honor the 3,384 Confederate soldiers buried in the hallowed ground there in by the lighthouse. 3,300.
Yeah, that's a shame. I know this sounds stupid, but it's almost a shame like they had built that hotel. It was sort of like a resort, like you said. It just seems unfair.
Or disrespectful.
Disrespectful. Because, you know, all those people passed away some of them violently, you know, and then just to build something there for people to come and enjoy life or whatever. I don't know. It's just...
Well, think about what Salem, Massachusetts does. They're a big tourist thing now. I mean, they literally are known for being a tourist location because they executed people that they deemed to be witches back in the 1600s. And now, you know, all these years later, it's like, hey, come visit us. This is the place where we hung all the witches.
Yeah.
Come visit us.
All right.
Come get a cookie in the shape of a witch.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so when you think about it.
I mean, it's very bizarre, too, that humans think that way.
We're very macabre. I mean, think about the people that go see the Villisca Axe Murder House, or, you know, this is the place that's known because a whole family and some of their friends of their kids were killed by an axe murderer, and people are just paying money to go in and check the place out.
Right.
And the Lizzie Borden house.
I mean, you know, it's curiosity. It's like, you know, you're just fascinated by it. But still, it's just weird. I mean, we go and, you know, visit places that are haunted, but I don't know.
If I ran a place like the Lizzie Borden or the Villisca Axe Murder House, I would run specials and be like, hey, prices this week are chopped in half or whatever. I would do specials like that.
Oh, my goodness. And you know what's sick?
What?
People really think that's funny.
Well, they probably would. Oh. Bring it into me. What a better place to bury the hatchet. Anyways, let's jump back.
And then you say, no disrespect.
Yeah. Not everyone is a believer, obviously, in ghosts, Tracy. One of those people was Point Lookout State Park manager Keith Freer. But he became a believer in 1999. Keith said that there are a lot of stories about ghost sightings. Many a ranger who has worked at the park can tell those ghost stories from firsthand experience.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they've seen a lot.
So what made Keith a believer? Well, on a summer evening, he was sitting in the living room in a small white house across the road from the fishing pier. The room faced south, and it was toward the road that the soldiers used to march into Point Lookout. His dog, Timber, and a friend's dog were both nestled at his feet. He and his friend were sitting there. He noticed that according to the thermostat, it was 100 degrees Fahrenheit. He and his friend were sitting there talking quietly when both the dogs, in a panic, jumped up, ran to the dining room. They both stood at the door barking continuously. So Keith and his friend were kind of dumbfounded. You know, what's going on? Why are the dogs just getting up, jumping, and running in there? All of a sudden, the room turned bitter cold, even though the thermostat still said 100 degrees.
Well, they probably welcomed it.
First of all, why are you in a house sitting down in a 100-degree temperature?
That would never fly with me. I don't understand why they would do that.
The room was ice cold in seconds. So cold, they could see their breath. Yeah, that sounds like Kentucky weather. Burning up 100 degrees, next minute you can see your breath.
Don't you know that's right?
It remained cold for about 30 seconds. Then it almost instantly returned to the sauna type conditions. He said he has no idea why this happened or how it happened, but he now knows that he believes in the supernatural because to him, there is no other explanation for what happened on that day.
True story. But, I mean, they should have been thankful for the relief for at least 30 seconds from the sauna.
So let's talk about...
Like, hey, thanks, man. It was hot in her.
I thought we were done and had moved on.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Do we need to play some Nelly or something, too? Or
yeah.
To end it out? You're not going to rap, are you?
No. So take off all your clothes. It's all.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the experiences that Gerald Sword had. Because remember, we told you some brief ones. But we didn't really get into any detailed experience that he had. Gerald was sitting in his kitchen one night. And he got this eerie feeling that he was being watched. A violent storm was just starting to hit the area. That's when he saw the face of a young man looking through the window at him.
Yikes.
He was wearing a floppy hat and a loose-fitting coat. Well, Gerald approached the door to let the visitor in, who obviously was just trying to get out of the storm and he was going to help him out. When he opened the door, the man floated in and disappeared.
Floated?
Floated.
Dude, I thought you said folded at first. I'm like, how you fold in a door? How you fold in? I mean, I wasn't like...
Like an accordion. Gerald thought that he could identify his ghostly visitor as one of these boats, the Steamer Express that had collapsed out there. He said that he thinks that it was one of the members of the ship. And the reason he says this is because that guy's body, I guess, had floated ashore at some point in time. And there was a description in the newspaper once his body was found. And he was actually buried pretty close to where his body washed up at.
Oh, really?
I guess back then they just...
Wherever you could put him, I guess.
Yeah, just, you know, hey, he's right there. Just dig a hole. But anyway, that's what he went by. But his he thinks his name was Joseph Hearney, who was a crewman on board the ship when it broke up. His description, like I said, was in the newspaper, and he went by that. At least, you know, that's who Gerald says he saw in his window. Gerald said he never saw a three-dimensional spirit again, but he did always have the feeling that he was being watched, and he would hear voices as well as the occasional cough. I don't know why the cough, but...
I don't know either. Oh, he's probably sick from being out in the rain.
Now, we also talked a little bit about Laura, who moved in. Her name was Laura Berg, and she's the one that had kept the notes during the investigations that went on.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't tell you is that Laura Berg was also the Secretary of State for the state of Maryland.
Kidding.
She was a very credible person. One night, she was actually laying in bed with her husband, Tim Berg. I bet he hated being around trees.
Tim Berg!
I wonder if he got like really cold or something, if he was iceberg.
I don't know.
Anyway, they were laying in bed one night, and Laura said they both heard distinct footsteps outside the bedroom. It sounded as if the person was wearing very heavy boots. The sound stopped just as quickly as it began. The couple also heard unexplained noises that would often awake them in the middle of the night, as well as odd smells that they would wake up to. And they would constantly hear people talking and walking in the hallways.
Well, I mean, that's cool that both of them heard it, so yeah. I wasn't imagining that.
So what did Hans
Holzer... Wouldn't it be cool if you could hear what they were talking about? How cool would that be?
It wouldn't be that cool, because then all of a sudden the mystique is gone. The fact that you can't understand them or hear them is what makes it cool.
You wouldn't want to know what they're talking about?
I'd want to, but then once I found out, it might be, oh, they were just talking about changing the light bulb. No excitement there.
That's true.
He was just talking about his irritable bowel syndrome. I don't care about that. So what did Hans Holzer think of all this? Well, he said he was tormented by the intense psychic impressions in several rooms of the lighthouse. He could feel pain and suffering emanating from a small bedroom on the second floor. Laura later told him that that's the room that they would wake up to where the bad odors were.
Oh, gosh.
Hans said, that room is haunted as hell.
Oh, I'm sure.
Now,
yeah, that's the kind of thing I wouldn't want to hear. If, you know, I'd rather hear maybe a conversation than somebody crying out in pain.
Let's end on this one. Laura said one night she awoke to see a circle of six lights above her head. She bolted upright, and she could smell smoke coming from the first floor. Running down the steps, she found that the heater was on fire. It was a small fire, and she quickly extinguished it. But she felt that the spirits saved her from disaster.
Very cool.
Occasion.
Very cool.
So there you go. There's the story of the Lookout Point Lighthouse. Or yeah. Point Lookout Lighthouse.
props to that spirit, man. That there was a lot of awful things there. I mean, good grief.
Yeah, I told you.
Did you ever tell me why, or did you?
I'm sure I did, but go ahead.
What all those people died from?
What people?
In the lighthouse, all the family members.
They died from different things.
Oh, because you said, because I was like, oh, I want to know what they died from. And you're like, we'll touch on that later. No,
because I said everything. There were people who died from massacres. There were people who died from shipwrecks. There were people who... as far as the people, the two people that died in the lighthouse, I don't know what they died for. The one guy was, you know, he'd only been there a month. The other guy was 3 months, but I don't know what their ages were or any of that. They obviously had adult kids that could take over for them. So.
I know, but how weird is that? Like, one was there a month, and then one was there 3 months, and...
Yep.
Man, what a turnover in employment.
What, $350 a year? I wonder what the last lighthouse keeper made compare it.
I don't know. Maybe four?
I mean, you think about it, $350 a year, it's a dollar a day. Roughly.
And if you look at that, you kind of say, hey, man, we really are kind of blessed.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you could build a lighthouse for $1,800. So
well, that's right. That's right.
All right. Anyways, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back to tell you some updated stuff, and then we'll get you out of here. All right, Tracy, what do you got going on over there? What do we got as far as I guess before we do that, let's cover again the cruise. The
Come
cruise
on,
is
baby.
Rapidly approaching.
See, now we can say it's this year instead of last year when we had to say it's next
it's
year.
It's this September. You've got till July to get it all paid for. You still have time. Maybe you can use some of your, if you get a tax return. So I know some people are planning on using their tax returns.
What's that?
To pay for it. Yeah. there are other people that are making installments on it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to pay $100 a month or whatever mm-hmm. until it's done, which now it'd probably be a little more if you haven't been doing it already.
Yeah. But
if you got in on the very beginning when we first announced it, you could have paid like $60 a month and had a nice room and had it covered by then. But you still got plenty of time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And if something happens, very important, if you start paying on it and something happens, you can get your money back before the deadline in July. Every bit of it.
That is so amazing because, dude.
Vacation experts are setting all this up according to what you want them to do. It's not a set payment plan. Like, there's a $100 deposit that has to be made when you book the room. But if you don't want to make another payment until July and pay it all at one time, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to say, if you just want to call next month and put $200 on it, and then $100 the next month, you can do that. Or you can set something up with Robin where they just take a set amount out every month to try to make it even. But you don't have a set dollar amount to do it.
Uh-huh. That's really nice, too.
Yep. Yeah. Very flexible.
So we're very excited about this cruise, and I hope we have a crap load of people that come. So
yes, I would love to have a crap load of people. Us in Brohio. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. You never can go wrong with that bunch.
Yeah, they are. They are great.
They are the life of the party for sure.
I do think, I won't have an answer anytime soon or when or all that, but I do think we're going to try to set up at least one live event this year in St. Augustine.
That sounds great.
So, and for those of you who came to the last one, I'm going to initially reach out to the same location. And then if I can cohorse Diane and Kelly to do it again, maybe we can set up another investigation of the lighthouse like we did the last time.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that one, we were only able to fit 60 people in that location.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a nice little intimate situation. It was right on the beach. They had rooms on the beach available, little condos that were, some of them were going for like $100 a night on the actual beach.
Yeah.
You can't beat that price.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Nice little place, and it's, you know, was close to the lighthouse. So we'll see. We'll cross all that bridge when we come to it.
Man, my head is just that gone.
Let us actually get down there. Tracy and I spent a lot of time driving in the last couple of days.
Good grief, that's a lot.
12 hours down, 12 hours back.
Yeah, but it's okay.
So
it's okay. We had a lot of quality time together in the truck.
Yes, we did. Tracy, what do we got going on over there?
Well, we have our iTunes reviews this week, and I'm going to try to say this. Well, first of all, we have Mojo Lobster. Love ya. And S. Cup and Skizzle.
Nice.
My nizzle.
What?
I don't know. I can't say that word. What are you saying? Scoppin' Skizzle. Oh, man. I know. I tried real hard. Please still love me. Thank you guys for your review. They were so, so nice. And we appreciate them more than you guys ever know. And yes, I have no shame in my game. Please, please, if you did get a minute of your time, please leave a review because they help us out a whole lot. And we appreciate everybody. And our Patreons this week is Mark Mark and Miss Tanya Bruce. Love you, girl. Thank you guys for your support and for the $100 Patreon lifetime thingy.
That ends tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow? Okay, because I can't remember. Okay.
So you've got one more day to sneak that in. I want to reiterate again, and I hate this with a passion, because timing-wise, it couldn't be worse for trying to get all these things out. But the books have still not come in yet. They're telling me the 10th, which is what, this week?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be able to, but we've got like literally 40 people waiting to send out the books and t-shirts. Now, everybody got the Lifetime Patreon already. Right, we send that out by email. But the books and the shirts are going to go out. If you haven't gotten yours yet, it's just because I'm waiting on these books. And I promise we're going to get them out. We'll sit down and take a boatload of stuff to the post office at one time.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Send these things out. But
yeah, it's like, it's frustrating because we want you guys to have, you know,
what'd you pay for?
Right, exactly.
And I've never had to wait this long. Usually when I order books, I've got them within 10 days. Mm-hmm. These books have been ordered for a month.
Yeah.
I ordered them as soon as we started doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like I said, they still haven't got there. And then I had to order another shipment because even with everything they got ordered, it wasn't going to cover what I'd ordered initially. Mm-hmm. And those books are going to be here 3 days later. Mm-hmm. And I just ordered them last week. So it was all because of Christmas. And
everything, I'm sure it was. But you know, we want to thank you guys from the bottom of our hearts. That, you know, we had a lot of people take advantage of that. And you guys are amazing. And it's much appreciated. We look forward to doing a lot more stuff for you all. And I just want to thank you all for hanging in with us. It's been 7 years and we are still humbled by, you know, all the people that listen from all over the world. It is a blessing that we will never take advantage of. It's just wonderful.
No, I agree 100%. Thanks to all of you.
We have like the biggest, hugest family ever. And it's a great feeling. So, love y'all.
Yep. We love you, and we'll talk to you next week.
We hope y'all have a blessed week. Bye.